Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavatitamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Verse 221. Yadaswasyapi bhoktritvam, mantunjyahetya yantada, sakshin yaropayetid. Sakshin-yāropa-yet-yetad, iti-kaiva, tathāvṛtā, iti-kaiva, kathāvṛtā, yadā swasya api bhoktṛtvam mantum jihreti ayantadā. Sakshini aropayet etad itika eva katha vritha. Remember, this is a whole analysis of the bhoktra, the bhokta. Who actually is the enjoyer? And so for all of these last verses we've looked at, is the Atma, the Kutastha Atma, the enjoyer? Is the Chidabhasa, the reflection of consciousness, the enjoyer? The Kutastha Atma can't be the enjoyer because it's free from any type of change or any type of modification. It's free from time. So the Atma itself can't be the enjoyer or the doer or the knower or any of these things. The Chidabhasa could be the bhokta, the enjoyer. Because the Chidabhasa, in fact, is the only thing that has what we call vikaras, has modifications. So the reflection of consciousness could be the bhokta. But the problem with that is that the reflection of consciousness can't even be there. It has no independent being. It's like having the sun reflected in water. That sun can't be there. The reflection of the sun can't be there without the sun. So the reflection, or the Chidabhasa, has no real being, independent being. And also, the Chidabhasa, the reflection of consciousness, being subject to modification, exists within Maya, exists within the creation. And so if it exists within Maya, it itself is Maya. So if it's part of the magic show, it's as much magic as the rest of the magic show. And so in that sense also, the reflection of consciousness can't have any real being to be the knower. So if the Kutastha can't, the Atma can't, reflection of consciousness can't, then it has to be somewhere in between the combination of the of consciousness itself and the reflection of consciousness. That's where we're left. But then he went on to say, but the problem, that's where we start. Any samsari is going to have to say that. But because the Chidabhasa can't stand alone, the reflection of consciousness can't stand alone. So I must be a combination of consciousness and the reflection of consciousness to make me as a jiva. But upon inquiry, you know, since the reflection of consciousness is mitya and has no being, there's no only mitya doership, only mitya enjoyership. That can't be me. I can't be that which has no real being. I have to be, in the final analysis, the one who has been, is real, has substance. And that's the Kutastha Atma. And so you end up with this combination, you know, of the Chidabhasa enjoying the Kutastha Atma, only to recognize that the Chidabhasa, the reflection of consciousness, is mitya, is apparent, it's not real, it has no being of its own. and the kutastha is who in fact you are. But the kutastha is not a bhokta. The kutastha, the changeless self, your changeless being, is not a doer, is not an enjoyer. So the bhok, what happens to the bhokfritvam, the enjoyership, it becomes mithya. Right? It becomes something that doesn't have, that has only apparent reality, that depends for its reality on your being, which is changeless and not an enjoyer, not a doer, not a thinker. Just changeless me, changeless being. And so, once the jiva, who is the one who has committed the mistake, the jiva is the one who says, I am the enjoyer, I am the doer, I am this physical body, I am the sense organs, I am the mind, I am the body-mind complex. Right? I'm the enjoyer of this world. You know, I do actions in order to gain the results of my actions. This person. Once this person gains knowledge, then there's not even a sense of the chit-abhasa. The chit-abhasa being really something real, or being somebody who's subject to all of these modifications. So this is where we got up to this. It's embarrassing even, this is where he says, you know, you're like your nose, loss of your nose. It's embarrassing to even think of yourself as an enjoyer, you know, or somebody who's going through all of these modifications, even from the standpoint of the chit-abhasa, even from the standpoint of the reflection of consciousness. They use the example later, it'll come, that if you have the sun reflecting in the water, right? The chit-abhasa is the sun, right? The chit-abhasa is the reflection of the sun. There's the sun and there's the reflection of the sun. The sun is not going to ever be muddy, and the reflection of the sun is not going to be muddy. You're also doing a superimposition of the dirty water or the muddy water or the agitated water upon even the reflection of the sun, right? Let alone the sun. I mean, obviously, the sun isn't being sullied or touched in any way. But even if you were to look at the consciousness that's as though enjoyed in the vritti, because the ahankara will say, I am the conscious being, I am happy, I am sad, all of these things. That means that there's an identification of the consciousness in the vritti, in the thought modification itself. But even that is only consciousness. It isn't taking on the names and forms which the consciousness is illumining, even from the standpoint of the ahankara, even from the standpoint of the so-called reflection of consciousness. So even that you have to let go, let alone the kutastha, the Atma, which is changeless, the sun that's illuminating. Right? So here, he says, yada, when one is jihreti, means when ayam, this person who now has knowledge, the ayam, this means this person who's gained understanding now, is ashamed. Jihreti means feels embarrassed now, feels ashamed to think of himself or herself being an enjoyer. Talking about the jiva now, even the chit-abhasa. They won't even feel that the chit-abhasa is the doer and the enjoyer. The chit-abhasa is mithya. It's part of maya, and even the consciousness that's being enjoyed in the chit-abhasa, that where I say, I am doing this, I am doing that, the aham remains the same, right? I'm enjoying this, I am enjoying that, the aham, the I remains the same. So even if for the one who feels shy, even to call the chit-abhasa the enjoyer, sakshini aropayet etad iti, then he says, how would that person superimpose the chit-abhasa, I mean superimpose the enjoyership on the kutastha? If the person won't even superimpose enjoyership on the chit-abhasa, do you think that they will superimpose enjoyership on consciousness itself, on the kutastha atma, He said, he says, ka eva kata vrata. What a ridiculous story. Kata means story. That story is nonsense. Vrata means nonsense. It's in vain. No person is going to do that. The one who's already negated the chittabhasa as the doer or the enjoyer is now not going to turn around and say the sakti, the atma, the kutastha atma, is the enjoyer. So, now, that being the case, okay, that the atma is recognized on all levels now, even from the standpoint of the reflection of consciousness itself, is not an enjoyer, and certainly I am not an enjoyer. That being the case, for the one who has recognized that, now we have to go back to the very first verse in chapter 7, which this whole 300 verses are about. This whole group of verses, almost 300 verses, is an exposition on this one verse from the Brihadaranyaka. And so he's now commenting on the second line. So the first line goes this, like this. Atmanam chet vijaniyat ayamasmi iti purushaha. That says, if a person, right, if one should realize that I am the Atma, means I am the Self, this Self, I am this, this I am the Self, okay? Means if one should recognize their Self to be this, means the Advitiya to the Purusha, to the Atma, then kim ichin kasya kamaya. For whose desire, enjoying what, and for whose desire do they fret over or get upset over the body? Understand what eight means. So, kim ichin, desiring what, kasi kamaya, and for whose desire, shariram, this body, understand eight, one gets agitated over the body. Okay, that's the verse. So now what he's referring to is kasya kamaya. For whose desire does one get upset over the body? Who is it that's getting upset? Who has the desire? Because the Atma doesn't. If the Atma is not a bhokta, if it's actually it's not a bhokta, it's not a karta, it's not an enjoyer, it's not a doer, right? It's not even a knower. So if the Atma now is not a bhokta enjoyer, then for whose desire is all of this consternation taking place? Because we suffer. There's sukha-dukha, we all suffer. Right? For what are we suffering? For who are we suffering? Who is suffering? Who's having the desire? Right? Kasya means for whom, kamaya, for whose desire, kamaya's desire, is all this suffering taking place? So now that's the question. So now he says in this next verse, itcha bipretya bhoktaram, itcha bipretya bhoktaram, akshipatya vishankaya, akshipatya vishankaya, kasya kamayeti tataha, kasya kamayeti tataha, shariranujvaro nahi. Sharira nitvaro nahi. So he's citing that verse here. So iti abhipretya bhoktaram akshipati abhishankaya kasya kamaya iti tataha sharira anujvaraha nahi. He says iti abhipretya, having understood this, having seen all of this, having realized it, you know, putting all of this together, so having done that, then bhoktaram akshipati, that person negates the doership. He throws it out as being not me. Right? He recognizes I'm not the doer. He negates all of that. Without any doubt, he says, avishankhya, with certainty, he throws out the doership. He recognizes, even in your own svabhava, in your own, he'll get more into this later, but just in your own being, you recognize that I am not changing. I am not an enjoyer. Things are not making me happy or sad. Things are not making me anything. I simply am. My being is constant. So having recognized the truth of that, and having understood, gone through all of this logic and seen it, and it's not just going through the logic as though it's a logical exercise. The logic is also a kriya. The logics themselves are pointing to a reality and then substantiating. They point to a reality and the logic substantiates what you're seeing. And so pointing to something which you see, then they give you logics as to why that has to be true. Right? The logic takes you to the scene and also establishes the validity of what you are seeing. So that's why he says here, Abhipraja, having understood this, having seen all of this in this way, as we've just been through, then he gives up, he negates this doership, Avishankaya, without any doubt, means he's been convinced, he's seen it, recognized it, and been convinced of its truth. That being so, then Kasya Kamaya Iti, then this has to come to the mind, which is from the verse, you know. For whose enjoyment then? He says, this idea, for whose enjoyment, makes sense. Why? Because I recognize Ahamatma, I am the Self. So for whose enjoyment then, right, then what? Therefore, sharira anujvaraha nahi. Says, so recognizing the truth of that, then he says, therefore there is no consternation. There is no fever concerning the body. Sharira is the body, so we'll see how many bodies there are. This being so, therefore, there is nothing to worry about. There's nothing to get upset about regarding the body. Okay? Why? Because he understands the verse that we've spent, you know, over 220 verses unfolding, and how this is clear that the Atma is not the enjoyer, having seen that, having understood it, having gotten that. Therefore, once that's understood, then, therefore, there is no reason to get upset over the body. Okay? That's what this verse says. So now we have to look at these different fevers. There's three different fevers. Okay. Stulam sukshman karanam cha. Stulam sukshman karanam cha. Shariram trividam smritam. Shariram trividam smritam. Avashyam trivido asti. Avashyam trivido asti. Well, let's see. Avashyam trividos dieva, avashyam trividos dieva, tetratetro chite dvaraha, tetratetro chito dvaraha, stulam, sukshmam, karanam cha, shariram trividam smritam, avashyam trividaha asti, eva, tetratetra uchitaha dvaraha. He says, the stulam, the physical body, sukshma, subtle body, karana, causal body. So, stula, stulam, sukshmam, karanam cha, shariram. These three bodies, the stula sharira, physical body, sukshma sharira, the subtle body, the causal, and karana sharira, the causal body, trividam, these. The sharira is threefold. There are three different shariras. It's threefold. Smritam, this is well known. Okay, smritam means this is what is taught. This is how it is taught. This is what is said. So the bodies are threefold. So then he says what? So the bodies being threefold, avashyam, certainly, trividaha asti eva, jvaraha. The jvara, the fever, also is going to be threefold. Right? If each body will have its own fever, right? Its own set of worries, its own set of problems, right? And so there's three different bodies, so three different sets of problems, three different sets of of pain or agitation or worry. Okay? So, and so that each fever is appropriate to each given body. So it says, tetra uchitaha jwaraha. The jwara, the fever, so is going to appropriate to this one, then to this one. You know, that's how they say it in Sanskrit. So each body is going to have its own set of fever, its own particular fever. So now we have to see what those are. Okay. Vata pitta shleshmajanya, vata pitta shleshmajanya, vyadaya kotishastano, vadaya kotishastano, durganditva kuru, kurupatva, gurganditva kurupatva, dahabangadayastata, dahabangadayastata, vata, pitta, shleshma, janya, vyadiyaha, kotishaha, tanao, durganditva, kurupatva, daha, bhanga, adiyaha, tata. He says, you know, in the Ayurveda, there's vata, pitta, and kapha, mm-hmm. also called shleshma. So, vadiyaha means diseases, which are janya, which are born of vata, pitta, and shleshma. This vata is the wind, bile, and phlegm. So in Ayurveda, all disease is caused by an imbalance of vata, pitta, and kapha. So he says, there are diseases, the diseases born of these three in the body, tanau, tanu means body, tanau, in the body, are kotishaha, are countless. Koti means a crore. Kotishaha means by the crores. The number of diseases that are born of this imbalance between the three humors in Ayurveda are innumerable. They are countless, okay? So then he says, he lists a few of them. For instance, durganditva. You smell. Bad smell. Okay. There's durgandhi. There's a bad smell. There can be bad smell in the body. Or kurupatva. The body can be deformed. Rupa means the form. Ku means the form can be bad. It can be hurt. It can be injured. It can be deformed. The body can be have a terrible odor. It can be deformed. It can... Daha, it can burn. It can be burned. Bhanga, it can be fractured. Banged up, fractured. Adiha, etc. It's countless what can happen. Okay? So, just tata, he says tata. He says, so he says, all of these diseases born of this imbalance, right? And similarly, and tata, he just means and. And the bad smell and deformities and being burned and being fractured, etc. All of these things by the cores can happen to the body. Okay. These are the jwaras for the body. Yeah. Let's look for the mind. Kama krodhadiya shanti, kama krodhadiya shanti. Dantya jalinga dehagaha, dantya jalinga dehagaha, jwara dvayepi badhante, jwara dvayepi badhante, pratya narankramat, pratya narankramat. Now he's going to go to the linga sharira with the subtle body. He's kama. Krodha adhyaha, shanti, danti, adhyaha, linga, deha, gaha, jwaraha, dvaye api, badhante, praptya apraptya naram kramat. Now he goes to the linga sharira. Kama, desire, krodha, anger, etc. That's one thing. Kama, krodha, kama, krodha, anger. This is one thing that's a problem. And then shanti is peace. Peace of mind. Danti is dhamma. Shanti and danti are shama and dhamma. So peace and also control of the senses, etc. So you've got kama, krodha, anger, desire and anger on the one side, and then peace and control of your mind and sense organs on the other side, etc. Linga deha gaha. All of these exist in the linga deha. Linga deha means body. Linga stands for subtle body. So linga is another word for sukshma sharira, linga sharira. It's another term for subtle body. So all of these exist in the subtle body. So he says, jwaraha, they exist as fevers. Both sides. These fevers on both sides, dvayapi, on either side, they badanti, they torment, right? They hurt, they torment Naran, the person. Kramat, in this order, in this order, the kama, krodha, etc., they torment the person, praptya, by their gain. In other words, when you have kama, a desire, or krodha, when it's there, when you've gained that, when you have that condition, then there's suffering and torment and agitation. On the other hand, for the other ones, shanti and danti, that peace of mind, control of the mind and control of the sense organs, shama and dhamma, they torment the person apraptya by their absence. When they're not there, the person, when those good things aren't there, the person suffers. And when the bad things are there, the person suffers. Bad things means the kama and krodha are obviously agitating. But when the shama and dhamma aren't there, that's also very agitating. It means that your mind isn't able to let things go, and if it can't let things go, then the dhamma should be able to kick in where you can at least hold it, you know. But without the dhamma, then the body is also, you're also acting out in the world. So for the mind, it's both the good things, the bad things when you have them, and the good things when you don't, you know. Both of those act as badante. Bada means to torment or to trouble a person or to cause pain. So these are these fevers on the subtle level, they torment or cause pain to the person. Then now we've got the deep sleep, the karana sharira. Swam paranchana veti, swam paranchana veti. Atma vinashta iva, atma vinashta iva karane, atma vinashta iva karane, agami dukkha bijam cha, agami dukkha bijam cha, ityetad indrena darshitam. Ityetad indrena darshitam. Swam paramcha naveti atma vinashtaha ivakarane. Agami dukkha bijamcha ityetad indrena darshitam. In the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, Chandogya, I'm sorry. In the Chandogya Upanishad, there's a couple of verses where Indra has been sent to the guru sends him away to go and really think about who he really is. And he gets as far as deep sleep. And he thinks, he feels that now I've discovered it. This is the Atma. You know, because he keeps doing the neti neti, not this, not this, not this. And he's objectified all of these things. And now he's left in the deep sleep state where none of these things are there. So I must be the deep sleep state. Then he realizes, well, yeah, but in the deep sleep state, I don't really seem to be there either. In the sense that I'm not really knowing myself at that time. Right? I don't know who I am. Is that liberation when I'm in a state where I don't really know who I am? Right? I'm just in pure ajnanam, in other words. And so there's a big unfoldment that goes on there, but he has to go a little farther than that. So what he says here is, the Atma does not know itself or another. Swam param Atma, because there's no the antikaran is an unmanifest condition, right? So the self does not know itself or another. Swam param cha naveti Atma, and in the karana sharira, in the causal body, and it seems as though it's been lost, because when you wake up, remember there's ajnanam here, so you have to look at it like this. When you wake up from the deep sleep state, you say all of this, I slept well and all was well with me. Right? But this is what we tell you in Vedanta. Because that's a fact. You do say, I slept well, all was well with me. But if you take yourself to be the mind or the body, in the deep sleep state, the mind and the body aren't there. So where am I? Right? And so I seem to, as though, be lost in the deep sleep state. Then the teacher will come in and say, take it to the Atma, and say, yeah, but in the deep sleep state, you say, well, you can describe that. When you come back from the deep sleep state, you describe it. All was well with me, you know. I slept, there was no experience there. I wasn't experiencing any duality at that time. I slept well, everything was fine. So we talk like that. In the deep sleep state for the ajnani, right, the karta is not there, the doer is not there, the enjoyer is not there, the thinker is not there, the feeler is not there, the physical body is not there. Nothing that you identify with as yourself is there, right? And so you are as though lost in the deep sleep. The Atma is as though lost in the deep sleep. And so here he says, so he's going back to this verse, because Indra had felt really happy with himself that he had realized. And then all of a sudden he realized, oh, this can't be right. This can't be right. I should be the one who is self-effulgent, self-evident, not just ajnanam with everything that I've taken to be myself, not there. So he says, you know, the Atma seems to have as though been lost in the causal body. And there is there's no knowledge of myself, and there's no knowledge of anybody else either. And so, not only that, then where the Shastra will say, Agami Dukkha Bijam, and it is this state of absolute ajnanam, the total ajnanam, that is the seed for all sorrow. All the sorrow that is to come. Agami means that's that which is going to come. The agami dukkha bijam. The ajnanam itself, so the karana sharira, which is that ajnanam, is causal for all of the dukkha that is yet to come. And so that's the jwara, that's the fever of the causal body. Because it is itself the cause for all of the suffering. Right? Because it causes that, because of it, there's the identification with all of the different bodies, which do suffer. They do have all of these problems, right? It's not like these bodies don't have the problems. They do have the problems. So then he says, and this is something that was seen clearly by Indra. And I went back, and I actually went into the Chandogya, and I read the section. It's in chapter 8, section 11, 1 and 2. It's very nice to read, actually, in the Chandogya, this discussion. So, I want to do one verse here, which kind of wraps this up. So now the thing is, he's just looked at all of the jhoras, all of these fevers, or all of these sufferings that go with all of the three bodies. And he says, Ete jhvara shariresu Ete jvara shariresu Tishu swabhavika mataha Tishu swabhavika mataha Vyogetu jvaraisthani Vyogetu jvaraisthani Shariranyeva nasate
Shariranyeva nasate.
He says, Ete jvaraha shrireshu, trishu swabhavikaha nataha. Vyogetu jvarahi tani, shrirani eva nasate.
He says, these fevers, these torments, shrireshu trishu, in all three bodies, svabhavikaha mataha, are considered to be inherent, to be natural to them. All of these problems are considered to be natural into all of the bodies, to belong to them, to be inherent in them. He says, Vyogetu jvarahi tani sharirani eva nasate.
He says, because when separated from these fevers, if we were to separate all of these problems from the three bodies, then he says, these bodies wouldn't exist. You can't separate, you can't pull them out of these three bodies and have the bodies there. Right? The bodies themselves are the problem. The mind itself, with its nature, that is the problem. You try to pull these things out of the mind, there's no mind left. You try to pull the humors out of the body, you know, and all of the diseases out of the body, then there's no body. That is the nature of the body. It's in a constant situation like that. So he says, by anvaya vyatireka, the vyatireka doesn't hold up. Remember, we've been doing this anvaya vyatireka in the Saturday class. When this is, that is. When this is not, that is not. So that's the vyatireka. So if you pull these drawers, these fevers out, then there's nothing left. Right, the body's just a dead pile of bones then. So he just gives an example to say how that is true. So let's do this last verse. Tantor vyujate pataha, tantor vyujate, tantor vyujate pataha, tantor vyujate pataha, vale bhyak kambalo yata, vale bhyak kambalo yata. Mṛdho gatas tata dehaḥ, mṛdho gatas tata dehaḥ, jvarebhyo piti drishyatam, jvarebhyo piti drishyatam. Tantoho viyujeta pataḥ, balebhyah kambalaḥ yatha, mṛdhaḥ gatas tata dehaḥ, jvarebhyah api iti drishyatam. He says, talking about how the jvaras and the body goes together, he says, just as cloth separated from thread, just as if you were to try to separate cloth, pataha, from the tantu, from the threads, or just like if you were to try to separate a kumbhala. Kumbhala is a wool blanket. If you were to try to separate a kumbhala from the wool, from its wool, or mṛdhaḥ gataḥ, if you were to try to separate a pot from the clay, right? If you were to try similarly, also, if you were to try to separate the body from these drawers, this is how you have, so he says, drishyatam, this is what is to be seen. This separation is not possible. Right? So, that being so, now I'm going to stop here, but that being so, he's going to go into another section about, since all of these jvaras, all of these problems belong to one of the three bodies, and you, either as Chidabhasa or as the Atma, are not the three bodies, then how can the jvaras belong to you? Hmm. How can these problems belong to you? So he's going to go into it now, into a whole unfoldment about that. So let's stop here.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
So are we in agreement with this approach that the problems are inherent?
Yeah.
And
they don't belong to the Atma.
They don't belong to the Atma. But then to expect them to vanish or to dissolve is an improper approach?
It's that as long as this body is alive, it will have problems. It'll get sick and die. So that's the end of it right there, right? Mm-hmm. We all get sick and die. So the body naturally has problems. Mm-hmm. The mind is subject to modification by its nature, mm-hmm. right? And ajnanam is the cause of all of the problems that we've ever had in the first place.
Yeah. But the thing
is this.
Yeah.
The problems that we take to being the Atma don't belong to the Atma. That's all that's being said. The problems either belong to the physical body, mm-hmm. or the subtle body, or the causal body. There are no problems in the Atma. The Atma is not even a bhokta. It's not even a knower for there to be those problems. And so, in another section, Vidyaranya says something like, the student is asking him something about liberation, and the prarabdha karma, and the Vidyaranya says, you know, well, I'm sorry, you've already taken this birth. So since you've already taken this birth, you do have to live out your prarabdha karma, right? And the prarabdha karma, the three shariras have their problems. That's the fact of it. This body will cause pain, will get old and die, you know, and your mind is subject to change and all these things. That's the nature of the upadhi, you know. But it's because you didn't get knowledge last life.
And we look
this life. He's tongue in cheek, right?
And then we look upon these upadhis and these problems as Ishwara and take as a witnessing.
Well, yeah, but what he's Vidyaranya is, I think, in as we see through the whole scheme as he's unfolding this more. For Jivan Mukta, once you drop this physical body, you don't take another body. This is the last time that you take it, that this Jiva will take a physical body. You just abide as Brahman who is Ishwara. Right? Because there's nothing, unless there's some pravritti, that there's something to cause you to take this body, some kind of kama, some kind of a desire, which if there is, you will take a body, so you don't have to worry about it. But if there is something that's drawing you back into the creation, that knowledge hasn't completely fructified yet, then you'll come and take a body and as many bodies as you need. But when a person has knowledge, there is the Atma is not a bhokta, it's not a doer, it's not a knower. It is absolutely full in its very nature of the whole of Ishwara, and so the pravritti or the inclination to keep transmigrating and take a body and all of this, who is the one that has that desire? Not myself. And so that Vidyaranya will look at it, which is true. I mean, I'm not saying anything different either. There's no transmigration left for Jivan Mukta once this drops off. And so you have things to deal with. As long as you have the supadhi, there's life to deal with. And now, since there's life to deal with what attitude do you deal with it? You know, you don't depend on the creation for your ananda, for your wholeness, because you are that wholeness. And so then, how are you in this creation? That's the whole karma yoga buddhi, right? Or seeing the whole thing for the jnani, seeing it all just as Ishwara. If you're seeing it as Ishwara,
you're recognizing your, you see, when you see it as Ishvara, your body, mind, sense organs have to be included in that vision. Right? That's the thing. You say, I see everything as Ishvara, you can't leave yourself out. If you say, I see everything as Ishvara, then I am the whole. Right? So there's not a body left behind. And so then if you see all of this as Ishvara, then there's an intricate play of the total prarabdha. The total prarabdha, of which your prarabdha is a part. Right? And so you appreciate the play of that prarabdha. And as an individual, you do what is there to be done. And you engage in the creation and the prarabdha that is there unfolding in front of you, but not for ananda. Not for, not in order to gain ananda. Not that there's not, there's sukha and dukkha in the creation. Right? And you can have an enjoyment and sorrow in the creation. But the source of, but this is not the source of the ananda for the mind. The source of the ananda for the mind is the Atma. And so, abiding as myself, then I engage in the creation. Why do I engage in the creation? Well, because I'm here. Because I've got a body, a mind, a sense organs, I've got prarabdha. There are other, there's people in my prarabdha. There's relationships in my prarabdha. There's my, a home in your prarabdha. There's, your life is in your prarabdha.
But right? So then when you, when
your life is your prarabdha.
So when that's happening, so then you're not the doer because you're Atma, but yet, you know, the body and the mind are doing things.
It's mitya, though. See, it's all mitya. Because, and it's not that it's not vyavahara, it's not that it doesn't have an empirical reality, it's not just subjective reality, but it is mitya. And so it's the same, at while this mitya doership is there, as though doing, as though enjoying, as though seeing, as though feeling, all of that is taking place. And at the same time, the kutastha, yourself, is there, aparoksha, who is not doing, who is not enjoying, who is not seeing, who is not hearing.
So, but when you say as though doing, you mean like an as though
mitya. Yeah.
I mean, does that ever get to
there's an ahankara. There's an ahankara, but it's an as though.
Right. But does it ever get to the point where it's kind of more like, you know, the kutastha atma, I'm the kutastha atma, I'm not doing anything, and whatever is doing is more kind of like Ishvara doing? I mean, yeah.
Yeah, you can, that's always, your, the jiva's doing is never away from,
yeah,
it's part and parcel of Ishvara.
Well, there's also something tricky here because you say that I am Atma is not the mind, but it, there's an there's,
say the mind is the Atma, but the Atma is not the mind.
Yeah, that's a.
But you have to, if you contemplate on this, I like the clay pot. Contemplate on the clay pot. The pot is the clay, right? But the clay is not the pot. Mm-hmm. The pot has is nothing but clay, but the clay is. Free of the pot. That's
yeah,
it.
I can do that.
And so when you think my mind is the self, there's no other self. The mind is the self, right? But the self is not the mind. And so what's so beautiful, the body is the self. The self is not the body. What's so wonderful about that is that it can help you to realize that the self that you take to be yourself as the body, the self that you take to be yourself as the mind, mm-hmm. is the self. It's just that you have to recognize that that self that you've you've correctly taken to be you,
yeah.
you've incorrectly taken to be dependent on the body, mind, sense organs.
Yeah.
But your sense, the sense of self, what makes you you, that is you. There's no other you. It's just that that you is infinite. That you, in fact, is Ishvara. That you is the self of the whole.
So taking the mind to be me is not an incorrect statement if I know that me is not
the mind.
The mind.
But when we say the self is the mind, the self. Okay.
The mind is the self. Self is not the mind.
Right. The mind is the self. But when we say that, it's, don't we mean the self is the adhisthana of the mind?
Yeah, but you have, yes, but it helps to think of it in terms of clay pot. Right, because it makes you understand that if you think adhishtana, that's also true, like rope snake using adhishtana, but the clay is also the adhishtana of the pot,
mm-hmm.
right? Because it's what is actually there.
Mm-hmm.
We use the rope snake for what we call this vivarta upadana karana, to show that the cause, does it go through any modification to become the effect?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you just stick with clay pot, the clay, you can see it as kind of moving. With rope snake, you see the rope does absolutely nothing to become the effect. But you can still look at both as adhishtana, because the one is which allows for the other to be. Without the adhishtana, the mitya can't be. It's totally 100% dependent on it. So when you say the mind is the self, what that means is there's nothing there but the self. So that the me, you know, the conscious being that I take to be me, is me. It's just that this me is changeless. It's kutastha, changeless, you know, and not subject to any time, not subject to modification, not subject to any type of objectification. But what's wonderful about understanding this is I know where to look.
Mm.
You know, you're not looking elsewhere.
Mm.
You're not going outside of your experience in any way. It's just you have to look at your experience differently. The mind has to do some viveka. It has to now look at the experience in a way that the Upanishad is unfolding, and then you say, oh, that's right, that's true. I'm not changing amidst all of this change. The mind is always changing. The body is always changing. But the self of the mind is never changing. The self of the body is never changing. The self of all experience is never changing. If it's never changing, though, it's not a doer, it's not an enjoyer. Who's enjoying? If it never changes, what's it enjoying? When you think of enjoying something, you think of sukha and dukkha. Sometimes I'm happy, sometimes I'm sad, this thing is making me really happy, this thing is agitating me, that's the bhokta. Right? But the atma is not a bhokta, it's not an enjoyer. It's always the same. And so now this enjoyership and all this has to be attributed. You have to see it for where does it abide? You can't actually find it. Because even if you look at the consciousness, because you take yourself to be a conscious being, right? So it's actually the enjoyership, all this idea of enjoyership, all this is are the moods and the emotions that are generated in the mind. But you're never either, neither the chidabhasa, the reflection of consciousness, nor consciousness is enjoying that. But that is its own experience, right? But in terms of any type of self enjoying it, that's not happening. The experience is there. And we fabricate with the ahankara. This ahankara is a fabrication, really, where I identify with this experience. I identify myself as being this experience. But myself is not this experience. This experience is an object that comes and goes. The self doesn't come and go and doesn't change. So that's what he's trying to talk
about.
It's
kind of like a movie, but more intense. Right? You know what I mean? You know what? Because we're limited by our experience, by the upadi. That limits the experience.
The upadi is the experience.
Yeah.
The whole experience is contained in the upadi. Well, except for the truth of it, which is the sat-chit, the conscious, changeless conscious being, which is the very being of the experience, but the variegated experience is maya. It is the upadi. We don't experience anything outside of the upadi. Right?
Well, you have to constantly make this kind of subtle differentiation, the subtle discernment of the changelessness of myself and the change that I take myself to be. That
it seems
separate.
Subtle until you see it.
Mm-hmm.
And once you see it, it's not subtle anymore. Because the changeless me is always exactly the same. So it's subtle. It's very subtle. And they even use examples about the subtlety, like like walking a razor's edge is one in the Katha Upanishad, yeah. Or using the humps of bird, taking the milk, if there's a bird bath filled with milk and water, it sucks out the milk. That's to show the subtlety, because the two are existing in exactly the same place and time. You know, it's not one's over here and one's over here. But that being said, there's still quite a difference between what is changeless and what is changing, what is subject and what is object. And so initially it seems very subtle in all of this, mm-hmm. but part of the problem, of course, is that you're not including yourself, the body, mind, sense organs, in, as an object. So everything has to be differentiated. There has to be viveka. So that absolutely everything that exists in the Maya Upadhi, you know, is differentiated from the me. And that means that you have to differentiate me from what you had always taken for granted to be you. The body, the mind, the sense organs.
Why would the... Oh, I'm sorry.
The language feels problematic to me sometimes because it applies to... When we say, you're this, you're not that, you know, right away then there's two. And just inherent in that language. And so I was thinking about how the Maya Upadhi, to say that that doesn't belong, the problems don't belong to the self, is misleading, because it's like saying the pot doesn't belong to the clay. Well, there is only clay.
That's
and
why
so,
you...
And so... You have to account for knowledge. You know, that knowledge belongs to Brahman. The Maya Upadhi belongs to Brahman. It's not, it can't be finally, it can't be objectified. You can't find anything, but you have to account for it by saying, that's knowledge, and that knowledge, I mean, how can you dismiss the knowledge that constitutes this whole...
The whole manifest knowledge.
Yeah.
It's not exactly dismissing it, but it's... It accepts it as Maya or as Mitya, right? So it's not, we're not saying that it's non-existent or not here, but what is its order of reality? Mm-hmm. Does it have any independent being of its own?
Yeah.
You know? And so if it has no independent being of its own, then what order of reality do we give that? We don't say it's non-existent. Mm-hmm. When we also don't say it's existent. We say it's Mitya.
But how can we reasonably say it doesn't belong to the self when there is nothing here but the self?
No. Well, because if there's nothing here but the self, nothing belongs to it because there's nothing but the self.
Right, so the language is all, implies all these things that don't...
The language implies all these things but has to continually break down... The language has to break through and break down itself
so
through election.
So you're saying finally, this doesn't belong to the self. I mean, finally you're saying... There is only the self. Like to say the pot doesn't belong to the clay, finally you have to say, there is only clay.
There is only clay.
There is no pot.
But
there is the word pot. There is the name and the form.
That's right. And that's the mitya.
Yeah.
Right.
And that does belong to the self, if there is nothing but the self.
Yes, you can say it belongs to the self, but it's a mitya belonging. It's like a mitya attribute. Because in fact, like if you use a clay pot, there is nothing there but clay, mm-hmm. right? And so here we have all of these names and forms. All of these names and forms break down into smaller names and forms. Right? But you can never find a thing here. There's no substance here, except for Brahman. And so the only thing that's really here is Brahman. But on this level of vyavahara, of experience, there's all kinds of stuff going on.
Sure. I mean, so there's Brahman as the material and the efficient cause.
Mm-hmm.
So you still have to account for the reality of those orders, that efficient cause as the intelligence which manifests.
But there's no efficient cause without the Maya Upadhi. It's not like Brahman is thinking to manifest the creation.
Right. But that Maya Upadhi is Brahman.
Well, it's mitya.
Yeah.
It is Brahman, but Brahman is not it.
Right.
Right?
How do we avoid making it sound like there are two things?
Well, how do you avoid making the clay pot sound like there's two things?
Well, if you how do you avoid making it sound like there are two things? Clay pot.
I'm not really sure what the question is.
well, because if you say, like, that's our, we use clay pot, rope, snake as a teaching methodology, right? Mm-hmm. Because you can say that there's a clay in the pot, right? And you could, but you can say the pot is totally dependent on the clay for its being, and in fact there's nothing there but clay. Mm-hmm. But you still have to account for the pot, because the pot is vyavahara, the pot is useful, but in another level, there is no pot. It's only clay. But on the level of the pot is useful. Right?
But the appearance of the pot, mm-hmm. that phenomenon belongs to the clay.
No.
The fact that that pot has nothing but clay for its existence suggests that the potness, the form, the name, are some kind of phenomenon that belong to the clay.
Okay, you can say that, but Swamiji will say like this, there's no category you can put it in. Mm-hmm. It's impossible to put it in the category because there really isn't anything there. Mm-hmm. The only thing that's really there is clay. Here, the only thing that is really here is Brahman, and yet there's this complex manifestation of infinite knowledge. We have the dream as a drishtanta for it. That's why in the Mundaka, Mandukya Upanishad, he spends so much, Gaudapada spends so much time on the dream analogy. Because your dream and your imagination, you experience maya. You experience the changelessness of yourself, the projection of a creation that has no independent being that can come and go. So we're not saying that's not there. It's not like that. It's not saying trying to negate it as though the experience isn't there. It's just the recognition that that experience has no independent being.
Yeah, that language works, that it has no independent being.
Well, that's how we translate mitya.
Yeah. In these verses, the language he's using is belonging. You know, the problems don't belong to the self, which finally that becomes problematic because the implication is that there are two things. There's the self and that which does not belong to the self. But it's only...
No, but then we have to keep working with the language because actually I think it's all right to say it like that. Like if I could say, you know, all of these things that we experience belong to Maya. But what do we mean by belong? That's where you place them. That's their order of reality. So now if we say, okay, in this order, and all these things that I experience mental agitation. I experience agitation. Where does the agitation belong? Who owns that in the experience? Well, that belongs to the mind. I experience an upset stomach. Where does that upset belong? Well, it belongs to the physical body, not to the Atma.
Mm-hmm. But if it all takes place within me,
mm-hmm.
then doesn't it belong to me? I
mean, well,
maybe that's
the question,
a spatial understanding.
Yeah, like if I were to say, when the body is sick, is the Atma sick?
The Atma's body is sick. I mean,
Do you think that the self is changing to become sick when the body is sick? Does the self go through a modification to become sick? Is the, you know, does the self experiencing sickness when the body is experiencing sickness? You can say it is if you want to go that route where you say whatever the Maya experiences, that's what the self has experienced, as long as you know that the experience is only existing in the Maya,
mm-hmm.
and that the Atma isn't having that experience.
Right.
But since there's nothing apart from the Atma, But then you have to understand the satyamitya, because in fact, I would have to be able to... Can I say right now that I, the Atma, is going through different modifications as I experience these vrittis, these thought modifications? So I definitely am not. Mm-hmm. But yet, all of these experiences are taking place. But am I changing as these experiences are taking place? I'd say, no, I'm not. Mm-hmm. But the experiences are changing. Mm-hmm. So the change belongs to the experience. The change belongs to Maya. Mm-hmm. Not so to the Atma.
Nothing is touching the substrate or any of the experience.
Which is the very self of the experience. Mm-hmm. That's why it's good to play around with your mind, where you notice the vritti after vritti after vritti taking place in one changeless consciousness. Consciousness is not modifying in any way, and yet without the consciousness there is no vritti. The vritti is totally dependent on the consciousness, but consciousness is not modifying as the vritti goes on modifying. Dream, imagination, all of these things are really helpful to work with because it makes you recognize. It's a type of nididhyasana, in fact, because it makes you again and again see that I'm always the same, no matter what the situation. And that's who I am, and what the mind, which is part of the Maya, you know, can count on. Because it's this body-mind that's having a problem. You know, the self's not having a problem. I mean, moksha and liberation and bondage and all of these things belong to the one who has the ajnanam.
Just, it seems that we have to say the self plus knowledge, you know. The self is changeless, but it does seem that on the knowledge,
but that, if
the
you
manifestation
say,
of knowledge is a continual change.
But if you say the plus has to be as mitya as the knowledge, if you're going to throw a plus in there, the plus has to be mitya too. Because otherwise you say there's a second thing that has its own being. For there to be a second thing, it means it has its own being. If this has this is a being and this is a being, right? Then you put this being plus this being. But there's no this being and this being. There's only one being. And this being, you know, that has this Maya, which is a mitya attribute. Mm-hmm. So Swamiji's come up with that term, a mitya attribute. Because it doesn't have any, because it doesn't have any reality. It doesn't have any separate substance.
Would you say ignorance then is mitya?
Yeah.
And then the teaching itself?
Is mitya.
To remove the ignorance, isn't it?
Yeah. That's right. It has to be that way.
To show of what is.
Yeah.
I get an image. I guess a sort of traditional image that helps me is that idea of the jeweled net of Indra. You know, so
yeah.
This knowledge is like, in a way, all these jewels like reflecting. Nothing's happening, really. On some level, you can say nothing's happening, but something about. There's no movement, for example. There's no movement, there's no change. And it's something about, there's something there to account for the appearance of.
But that's the Maya. And nothing is happening in terms of what is actually here. It's absolutely stable. That's why you can wake up from a dream and absolutely nothing has happened. Nothing. Even though that whole dream universe that was so real while it was happening and you were actually a jiva within it, it's a universe. But when it goes away, nothing has happened at all. There's been no movement, nothing. That's the truth of it. That's the Atma. That's Brahman.
The only differences were coming clearer.
The jiva, the one who's ignorant, is becoming clear.
Yeah.
And in the becoming clear also, it's the viveka. It's the recognizing the aprokshitvam, that your self-evident nature. But you're not discovering a new self. You're recognizing yourself as the truth of this. And that's aproksha. Yourself is self-evident. But all of the superimpositions have to be You have to be relieved from all of the superimpositions, which are obvious once they're pointed out. Like you simply can't be something that you objectify and comes and goes. If you're still here and something is gone, some experience is gone, and you're still here, it's not you. That thing that is gone or has changed is not you, because you're still here and it's gone. You know, it sounds silly, doesn't it? But that's that anvayavyatireka. You know? Experience is here, I am. The experience is gone, I'm gone. Then I'm the experience. But if the experience is here and I'm here, and the experience is gone and I'm still here, I am not that experience. Right? The experience may seem to be me because it's dependent on me. That's the mitya. But when the experience goes and I'm still here, that means that there's no relationship. The relationship is very one-sided. Right? Like the pot has a very strong relationship with that clay, because without the clay, it's dead. It's gone. It's vanished. But the clay has no relationship with the pot in terms of any type of dependency at all.
Can you say just a couple of things about you said that when someone gets knowledge and they don't come back, they don't take another body, they just abide in Brahman. And
not abide in Brahman, they are Brahman.
They're Brahman, and I don't know if you said this, but their upadhi is
Ishwarupadhi.
Ishwarupadhi. So I guess I'm curious about what that means. I mean, because we call Ishwara an infinite mind. So does that mean one is the infinite mind? I mean, it's because Ishwara is an upadhi, so then one would have an upadhi. It would just be Ishwara, not an individual jiva.
Yeah. We call Ishwara the Sameshti upadhi because it's also Maya. Right? And so, but it's different than a jiva upadhi because there's no ajnana there.
Mm-hmm.
Why we say that you are Brahman. Okay? You are Brahman. But without this upadhi, means because the ajnanam is gone, then whatever is Brahman, and Maya is, in a sense, in Brahman, or is Brahman. We can't even say Maya is in Brahman, as though there's a Maya that's in Brahman. So you have to say Maya is Brahman. But Maya itself, if you want to say Maya is Brahman, you can't. That's what we mean by can't categorize. You can't say that Maya is Brahman, you know, but then Maya is there. And it has no being apart from Brahman. So there's no separate Maya apart from Brahman. And you are Brahman. And so this Maya expression is Brahman. Even though it's by nitya, it can't change Brahman. See what I mean? Like a dream can't change you.
Yeah, I'm just wondering about it's impossible to wrap one's head around what it would be.
You can't.
Like to have Ishwara as one's. I mean, because my Ishwara is not.
Yeah, you can't wrap your head around it.
Okay.
Because it's infinite. It's infinite knowledge. Mm-hmm. And this body is not. And mind that can't give that experience of infinite knowledge.
But it is because of Maya that. What we recognize
all duality.
So everything that is mitya comes
Maya.
From Maya.
Because Brahman's not mitya. Brahman is satyam. Satyam means that which can't be mitigated in past, present, or future. That which is, period. That's satyam. Nitya is that which is not satyam and is not non-existent either. That's the definition of mithya. It can't be categorized as satyam, nor can you say it's not there. So we say it's a dependent reality. It doesn't have any being of its own. And so there's not a maya away from Brahman or other than Brahman. And so that's why maybe Swamiji has taken to saying it's a, like a mithya attribute of Brahman, because it doesn't change Brahman in any way. You can't put it anywhere. Where are you going to put it? You can't put it outside Brahman because there is no outside of Brahman. You can't put it inside Brahman as though it's such a ananda. You know? So what are you going to say about it? Where are you going to put it? And then if you say Brahman plus Maya, then you've got this plus sign. So I think that's why, you know, mithya attribute. The mithya attribute of vivarta, another word is vivarta upadana karana. Upadana karana means the material cause. Vivarta means the material cause that doesn't go through any change to become the effect. That's what the vivarta means.
The ocean wave example works well for me in this, because there's all this movement. Nothing's happening to the water. How can you say something's happening to the waves? There's only water, and yet there is something happening. And yet, not to the water.
That's right. To make that, you have to be a little careful with that, because in your mind you can say, well, there is nothing that happens to the water, but the water is bending around to become the waves. So that is the limitation of the example. But if you can see that from the standpoint of just water, there is nothing happening at all. If you think of water as absolutely non-dual, without any, you know, space or air around it, just only water, and then also there's these waves. But the water is not changing to become the waves. That's the situation. So this is Brahman. This expression is Brahman. But Brahman is vivarta upadana karana. It doesn't go through any modification to become this expression. And we have these drishtantas, experience ourself in our imagination and dream or projection. Even to be able to use an example, like see a rope on a snake. A snake on a rope. Right? Shows this maya. We have maya at our fingertips all the time available to us. And so we can understand in an individual way this relationship. You know, between this mithya relationship. Satyam mithya. Everything is satyam mithya. That needs to be understood.
So nothing of the relationship with the death of the body.
Nothing happens. Zero. Like dream, waking up from a dream. How you don't experience death when your body and universe are annihilated. There's no death experience whatsoever. There's a change in venue.
Is coma and deep sleep one and the same?
I think they're different conditions physically, but their coma and all of these things are put into the karna sharira. When we look at the three states of experience, the waking state, dream state, deep sleep state, in the dream, even imagination, daydreaming are put in the dream. Waking, anything, as long as your sense organs are active, that's waking state. And whenever the dream and waking state are not being perceived, that falls into the deep sleep category. So coma would go into the deep sleep.
I found this really interesting thing about dreams, that it actually takes more metabolic activity to dream than to be awake.
Is that right?
Yeah. Like you use more glucose in your brain.
Wow. That's interesting.
Another weight loss.
Well, it's creating a whole new... Look at what it's doing.
Yeah.
It's doing a lot, though. Yeah. Very busy. It's being Ishwara. You know, little Ishwara. Well, are we done?
It's like a lot of people.